Are they joining Aditya?
I'm not sure. They may be probably driving to Orlando today. So I don't know. They may not be able to join.
Narnishi also?
Yes, yes. I'm talking about him. I don't know about Rupini Balmamadhan. I sent her a text, but I didn't receive any response.
Okay. Yeah, actually, see, the thing is that I think everyone is checking the message in the group, because I can see, like, when I post a message, then I have the option of seeing who all have seen the message. So I can see the message who have read. But the problem is that, like, not everyone is replying. So, you know, I think if everyone can reply, it will be really good for coordination. So, okay. So let's start now. Let's discuss an overview of the last class, because some of them are coming for the first time. So did anyone join in between? Because I heard a beep sound.
Hare Krishna, Prajit.
Ah, Akash Guru. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so can anyone relate some points from the last class, what we discussed? Okay, is Kishan Prabhu also there? Kishan Agarwal. He's not joined yet, I think. So Akash Prabhu, are you recording the class? Or is Sumit Prabhu recording?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It is recording.
Okay. Okay, yeah, so 3-4 devotees, they are yet to join. I don't know if they'll join or not. Okay, so can anyone recollect points from the last class?
Prabhuji, we discussed about 3 stages of devotional service.
Yeah, correct. Yes.
Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti.
Right, okay. Then?
3 types of devotees, Kanishtha, Madhyama and Uttama.
Yeah, correct, okay. Then, so you remember, you know, we also discussed what is the difference between Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. Why there is a separate need to categorize Bhava and Prema. It's not just, you know, the goal of sadhana is sadhya. So sadhya means the final prayojan, you know, the end result of our sadhana. And that is actually Prema. So then why do we need Bhava? So why it is in 3 parts rather than 2 parts? So I had explained that also. Does anyone remember this? This is an important point.
In Bhava Bhakti, there are still some impurities because of offenses. But in Prema Bhakti, there are no offenses left in the last stage of Prema Bhakti.
Correct. Perfect. Yeah. So Bhava Bhakti, there are, although, so Bhava Bhakti does not come under Sadhana Bhakti, because the goal of Sadhana Bhakti is to attain ecstasy or Bhava. And because Bhava Bhakti is actually more controlled by emotions, so these emotions are arising from the Ladini Shakti of the Lord, like the Samvit Shakti of the Lord. So it's at the stage of Bhava, there is a combination of Samvit potency and Ladini potency. So it's just a first ray of Ladini potency. Okay, like you see, when you are inside the room, and if you just open the door, and if the sun is right, standing in front of you, you know, and the sun ray will enter the door inside the room, then you see through a slit the sun ray will enter. So that, you know, small portion of the sun ray which is entering, so that actually is the manifestation of Ladini potency, that small portion. And when you reach Prema, you know, there is complete manifestation of Ladini Shakti. So at the state of Bhava, as Mataji was saying, that the impurities are there because the possibility is that because of severe aparads, severe offenses to devotees, you know, so these are carried forward, because it takes a lot of time and it takes many stages for the offenses to get rid of completely. So all the offenses can get rid only at the state of Prema. Okay, so at the state of Bhava, you know, you realize your Swarupa, but that Swarupa is not fully manifested. But at the same time, you feel ecstatic symptoms in your heart, in your body and all that. So this is a very advanced stage. And that is the reason it does not come under Sadhana Bhakti. So it's a separate classification. But at the same time, it is also, you know, still below Prema. Because Prema means complete destroying of anarthas. Okay, yeah. So any other points you recollect?
Sorry, I have a question on this.
Yeah.
Sorry, in the unorthodox state, the offenses are clear and the anarthas are removed. And you are saying that in the Bhava Bhakti state also, anarthas are getting removed. So,
okay.
What are the categories of anarthas in the two?
Okay, so that's a good question. That basically we understand that at the stage of Bhava Bhakti also there are offenses, and then at the stage of Anartha Nivritti also there are offenses, right? So basically anarthas. So see, first of all, we have to understand that there is a difference between anartha and offenses. Anarthas are mainly because we have past bad habits, conditioning, our own conditioning is there. So Prabhupada says that at the stage of Nishtha, 75% of the anarthas are destroyed. Okay. So it does not necessarily talk about offenses. And see, generally offenses can, you know, get destroyed at the stage of Bhava, but only those offenses which are very severe, they only remain. The traces of that offenses will remain till Bhava. Okay. But majority of the offenses will be cleared. They will be destroyed. So at the stage of Anartha Nivritti, when we do Bhajana Kriya, and you know, once we start chanting the holy names, then all the impurities will come out. Like, you know, today morning I was listening to Radhanapur lecture, and he was saying that when devotees, they start this process of bhakti, then, you know, like he compared this process to the churning of the, churning of the ocean, you know, to get nectar. So when the churning was going on, the first thing that came out was what? It was poison, correct? If you remember that past time, you know, how the demigods and the demons, they were churning the ocean to get nectar. But the first thing that came out was poison. So similarly, when we start practicing Bhajana Kriya, that is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Saranam, Pada Sevanam, Vandanam, Archanam, and all these processes, then what comes out is our own anarthas. They actually kind of, you know, they appear over the surface. Okay. And that is the reason why we feel more agitated. You know, so even though we have taken bhakti, instead of going down, you know, all these anarthas going down, it actually appears over the surface. And that is the reason we feel more agitated. Okay, but we have to tolerate that. So once we tolerate and control the mind, then we can reach, we can cross Nishtha, you know, we can cross Anartha Nivritti and reach the stage of Nishtha. So then in the stage of Nishtha, we are kind of situated in the mode of goodness, because 75% of anarthas means passion and mode of passion and mode of ignorance is destroyed. Okay, so mode of goodness will still remain. So at the stage of Nishtha, you know, there is mode of goodness. And offenses, the, you know, the reaction to the offenses, they carry on till Bhava. Okay, so that is the difference. Anarthas are almost completely destroyed at the stage of Bhava. Only the reaction of the offenses will remain. So this is the difference between clearing stage and at the stage of Bhava. So does it answer your question?
Can you give any example of some offense that remain at Bhava stage?
Any severe offense. So see, what are the offenses to the holy name? The 10 offenses to the holy name. So if you commit, and the most, you know, the topmost offense is to offend the devotees of the Lord who have propagated their lives in spreading Krishna consciousness, or to disobey or disrespect the spiritual master, you know, or you know, then there are gradations of offenses. Like you commit offenses through mind, through body, and through words. Okay, so physically, if you beat a devotee, you know, like you, if you get angry at some devotee and you start fighting, you know, so that is, and if that devotee is very exalted devotee, if you happen to, you know, physically harm him, then that's a very severe offense, and that reaction will go away after a long time. Okay. So basically, you know, offenses that are committed to Uttama Adhikaris, you can say like that, the topmost devotees of the Lord. So these offenses, they do not go quickly. Okay. Yeah, so, and see, Vishwanachal Thakur mentions, in the Ajamil pastime, which I will be conducting in one of the classes, with the US devotees, you know, a special class on that. And I will mention there that Vishwanachal Thakur says that the two most dangerous offenses is, first is offending the devotees, and second one is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting holy names. Okay, so these two, they do not go very easily. But other offenses, the other 8 offenses, they can easily go just by continuously chanting the holy name and, you know, regretting and repenting for your offenses and taking shelter of the holy name. Just by that, all the other offenses will go away. But these two offenses, they do not quickly go away. Okay, so these are the category of offenses which are very severe. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, so any question or comment? Okay,
what
so...
devotee is tightly probably.
Huh?
Let us say, you are is this anartha or offense?
What?
You talk ill about a devotee behind his back.
Okay. Yeah, so, see, we have to understand the intention. Okay, now, if you are talking ill about a devotee behind his back, but if that is for the benefit of other devotees, okay, because you know the devotee well, and you know that, you know, he is not behaving properly, and it's not according to the etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, then if you educate others that you should stay away from this devotee, then it is not a problem. So intention is main thing. But if you just want to minimize or, you know, kind of defame his qualities and all that, and you are envious, and that is the reason why you are doing that, then that is an offense. So we have to actually see what is the intention behind everything. Okay. So that's how we understand. So see, offenses can be committed through mind, word and body. Although in Kali Yuga, we don't get the reaction for any sinful thought or activity in the mind, but we get the reaction for offenses in the mind. So, you know, we have to be very careful actually. In Kali Yuga, although sinful activity reaction we won't get, but of the reaction to the offenses we'll get. But that reaction is not as severe as you know, when it is implemented in action. So there is a degree of reaction. So if you commit some offense in the mind, but you actually do it, you know, physically, if you do that, then that physical offense, the reaction to that will be severe. And offense in your mind will be a little bit less severe. Okay, but still there will be offense. So in order to understand what is an offense, we have to actually know, we should have knowledge that, you know, what is offense, what is not an offense, and, you know, what is the intention, what are the etiquettes we have to follow in bhakti, how we should deal with Vaishnavas. So all these things are very extremely important, Vaishnava etiquette. So I strongly suggest each and every devotee to kindly go through the Vaishnava etiquette manual, which is written by Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj, or I think one more is there by Bhakti Charu Maharaj. So in that, specifically if you go through the section of Vaishnava dealings, then you will find how you deal with, you know, the devotees who are senior to you, the devotees equal to you, and the devotees who are junior to you. So once you know how to behave with them, then you will understand what is offense, what is not an offense. Like, for example, if you are a senior and if you are in a position to correct someone, okay, so then even if you chastise them for their benefit, then it is okay. Then it is actually done for the service of the Lord. So, you know, you want the devotee to improve. Okay, but if you just chastise because you just want to, you know, find fault with the devotee without any reason, then it's an offense. So the intention, motivation also depends a lot. Okay, so this is the thing. So whenever you get a chance, you know, please read. Actually, I think the etiquettes and all that we'll discuss in Chaitanya Charitamrita class, because Gaur Leela is full of etiquettes. So whenever there is some opportunity, we'll discuss about that. Yeah, okay. So does that answer your question?
Yes, Prabhuji. Now, if you're a senior devotee and Prabhuji. You see...
Okay, so who... Okay, before Sakshi Mohan Prabhu, someone called...
Aribon.
Yeah.
Prabhuji, I have one question.
Okay, Sumit Prabhu, okay.
Devotees... means some of the devotees are there. Physical habits will be gone because due to certain spiritual practice, physical habits will be bad, physical bad habits will be gone after some time. But what about mental habits? Offensive mind, sometimes offensive mind, sometimes backbiting, politicalizing, then criticizing. Sometimes devotees are doing criticism, means chugli karna, criticize karna.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
in front of another devotee.
Correct. Okay. What is Sakshi Mohan Prabhu's question?
Prabhuji, my question is, would keeping silence when you know that it is not right, is the right behavior or not the right behavior as a devotee?
Okay, very good questions. And I would like to say something that actually this is the thing that we should discuss, because these are the practical things that we observe in our society and we should know how to deal with that. So if any other devotee has any, questions related to this, then, we can just keep continuing. Obviously, we'll cover the third chapter also. But if they have any questions related to this particular topic, then they are free to ask and we will clarify that. So, let me address Sumit Prabhu's question. So what he's saying is, we have this tendency, past bad habit, and it can be either in the mind or it can, physically be there. So how to deal with that? So basically, first of all, association is the key. The more we associate with advanced devotees, the more we get rid of these anarthas quickly. Okay, so association is one thing. Second thing is that we should also have knowledge. See, now you have asked this question. So if you know the answer for this, then you know in your mind that what I should do and what I should not do, right? So you will have the discrimination power. So then you use the discrimination power and then you analyze whether what you are doing is correct or not. So as I told earlier, that intention is the main thing to judge, whether a devotee should criticize someone or should not criticize someone, and whether that devotee is in that position, whether he is in that responsible position to judge or criticize others. If he is not, then he should not do it. Okay. And regarding the offenses in the mind, see, all these things are basically practice. By practice, we, develop all these qualities. So we start with, at least externally, we don't do it. Even though it is happening in the mind, it is coming in the mind, we don't implement physically outside, externally. So judge what to do in that situation. If there, because of past conditioning habits, if there is some thought process where you are criticizing a devotee or you are thinking ill of a devotee, then just let the thought come and ignore the thought. Don't meditate on that. Don't focus on that. Okay. So that is the stay, like, practice. It requires basically practice, how to do it. And then externally, you take association of devotees because, see, it's a gradual step. First, as I, explained in the earlier class also, that nishtha, in the stage of nishtha also, there are three stages, sub-stages. So there is kanishtha nishtha, there is madhyam nishtha, and there is uttama nishtha, right? And all the three are connected to, the uttama nishtha is connected to the mind. Means that, you won't even get any bad thought about anyone. So that much level, you have practiced in your spiritual life. You have become so advanced that the mind will also not disturb you so much. Okay, then at the stage of madhyam nishtha, the mind will disturb you, but you will control your senses. You will not implement, and through your words also you will not speak out something ill about someone. Even though if you get the thought of someone, whom you would like to criticize in the mind, but then externally, by words you will control it, and externally you will not show it also. So that is at the stage of madhyam nishtha. And then kanishtha nishtha is a stage where you, in the mind, you will get a lot of thoughts, you will get a lot of disturbance. Sometimes it can happen that, through words also you might criticize someone or you might disturb someone. But then by actions, your actions should not reach a stage where you start, getting physical with devotees. Okay, so this is the first stage, that steadiness in external, physical level, then steadiness in the form of your verbal language, and then the highest stage is steadiness in terms of mind. So we have to see where, which stage we are currently. If we are at the Kanishta, Nishta, first of all, you know, we have to reach steadiness. That's a different thing. You know, even among Bhajanakri also, you know, these are subcategories, subdivisions. And if someone is at the stage of Bhajanakriya, you know, they have to identify what stage they belong to. And accordingly, then we have to take association of senior Vaishnavas. We have to be sincere in our devotional practices. And then we should attain knowledge. By that knowledge, we can discriminate. And that's how we practice, basically. Even if the thought is coming in the mind, we control it. Okay. So does that answer your question, Sumit Prabhu?
Yes.
Okay. Now thank coming to Sakshi. Much. No problem. Yeah. Sakshi Mohan Prabhu's question of that should we speak if something goes wrong somewhere, then should we speak or not? Yeah, so see, these are the practical things that we see in ISKCON. That, see, because I was actually explaining, I think in the previous class I was saying that not everyone is at the Uttama Adhikari stage. And because it's a worldwide organization, so there are different people with different culture, backgrounds and everything from different parts of the world, they are joining this movement, right? So it's not that, see, generally Indians are supposed to be exemplary for all of them, because Indians have the birthright, you know, qualification to practice Krishna consciousness, and they are like, you know, following culture and all that since many years. Okay, so Indians are supposed to be like that, but now in Kali Yuga, as you know, we discussed in our CC class that everyone is a Sudra, so even Indians, they are influenced by the Western values and all that. So what happens when many devotees assemble in a society, then there is conflict between the culture and the way we speak, the way we present things and all that. So for that reason, you know, we have to discriminate. We have to discriminate who are the devotees with whom we would like to associate first. Okay, so we cannot associate with everyone. We have to choose our association. And we associate with similar-minded devotees who are sincere and who have the similar liking in spiritual life. Okay, so this is the first step, that you you gain knowledge, you discriminate, you choose which are the devotees who you like to associate with. Now, after doing that, if something is going wrong somewhere, okay, and if that is not affecting you, or neither that is affecting your the devotees, you know, whom you are close to, then you don't have to speak out anything. You know, you have to just keep a distance. Because even if you speak, then, you know, if you say something, then the devotees should also hear you. If they do not hear you, if they do not respect you, if they do not respect your values, then what is the use of speaking, right? So, if you are in a position to correct something, some situation, and that will help others, you know, then, yeah, then definitely you can speak. But if it's not connected to, you know, your personal thing or your, you know, devotee circle, or you see it is not causing harm to anyone, then don't speak about it openly. And unnecessarily, you don't have to, you know, create issues for that. Okay, so that is how we identify, you know, when to act, you know, according to the situation. Okay.
We have been very diplomatic in this.
Diplomacy is not the right word, because here we basically use the word discrimination. Okay, so discrimination is essential in spiritual life to advance. Because we have to understand that, our goal is to advance in spiritual life, and other devotees should also have the same desire. Otherwise, if they have ulterior motive, then what can we do about it? You know, we can just keep distance, and we cannot associate with them, because if we associate, then we are dragged. You know, then we also get influenced by the politics and, you know, the behavior and everything. Okay, so because it is said in the Shastra that whoever you associate with, you attain their qualities or you become like them, right? So why to take association of such people, you know? That is the reason. See, first of all, you should know where you are, what is your, you know, whether you are Kanishta, Uttama, Madhyama. Okay, or whatever, you know, like what is your standard of bhakti, and depending on that, you have to select your association. Okay, so yeah, does that answer your question?
Understood. Yes, understood.
Okay. Any other question or comment?
Yes, sir. Hare Krishna. I have a question. When we, like you said, that we have to distinguish between devotees whom we must associate or whom we must not associate. When we will judge devotees, then we may commit offenses. How to avoid this? Because for discrimination, we have to judge. And then when we will judge them, and then we will commit offenses, unknowingly or knowingly.
Okay. So, very good question. That whether to discriminate, one has to judge. So that is right, that we don't have to judge anyone. As simple as that. That we don't personally target anyone. See, if you are not comfortable in the association of a devotee, if you think that your sadhana is getting affected, if you think that this devotee is not inspiring, in fact, he's like, I am very disturbed in this association, I'm not comfortable, then you just have to stay away from that devotee. You don't have to judge anything about him. You know, that is a simple thing to do. You don't have to analyze, ye pagal hai, ya phir, he's not behaving properly, his nature is like this and all that. You don't have to judge that. You just have to, for yourself, you have to decide what you want to do. If you are not comfortable, just keep away from that. See, actually speaking, there are many dedicated devotees, actually, in our movement, who are popular also, very popular. Their lectures are, heard everywhere in the world. They are very popular figures, and probably they are very committed to their services. But when we associate with them personally, it might also disturb our spiritual life. That is true, because, even if they are doing a lot of services, probably they have not cultivated humility. They are not, like, they have so much ego. When you talk to them, the way they deal with you, you are not comfortable with that. So then better you just keep away from that devotee. So no need. See, anyone who is popular or so-called senior in ISKCON, or who is giving fantastic lectures and classes, very, very entertaining and all that, you don't have to, you shouldn't think that, these devotees are very uttama adhikaris or they are very advanced. See, popularity any materialistic person can also get. Because if it is in their karma, then Krishna will use their karma to, spread Krishna consciousness. So it is not necessary that they are actually very advanced devotees. So a truly advanced devotee is very humble, and his dealings are very straightforward and very, gentle. So these are the symptoms by which, Radhanath Maharaj says that how do we identify which devotee we have to associate? So Maharaj was saying that two things are required. First is how much that devotee is dedicated to his spiritual master, how much he is a humble servant of his spiritual master, and how much he is a humble servant of the Vaishnavas. In both cases, humility is required. So we have to judge like that. How much humility is there in that devotee? Okay, so this is how we have to discriminate. We don't have to judge about it. And then we don't have to tell others about it. That, if you think that, if some other devotees, if they would take association, and then because of that association, his spiritual life will be affected, then you can tell them that stay away from that devotee. If you know that devotee personally and you have experienced, okay. But if you don't know the devotee, and if you just meet him a couple of times and you don't get good experience from that association, then you yourself stay away from that. That's it. And you don't have to tell others. And if others, they are inspired by that devotee, then they will continue with that devotee. So this is the procedure, process, how we discriminate. So judgment basically means that something which you see is actually not correct. It's not true. Okay, so and another way to also distinguish between discrimination and judgment is to ask senior devotees. So you can ask senior devotee, if you feel something which is not proper about a devotee, then you can ask them. if they know that devotee, that, you know, Prabhuji, I have experienced this in his association. Have you also experienced this kind of thing? Like, what do you think about this? You know, like, he did this to me, he told this to me. So have you also experienced the same kind of thing? Then if they say that, yeah, you know, you stay away from the devotee, then that is also indication that, you know, we are discriminating, we are not judging anyone. Okay, so many times this will happen in spiritual life, that we might not be comfortable with certain devotees. You know, we meet them a couple of times, but then we are not so comfortable. So then, you know, we just keep distance from them. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So any comments or any questions?
Hello.
Yeah.
Can we start this chapter 3, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu?
Yeah, we'll start. So before that, any other questions or comments are there related to this? Okay, is everyone there?
Yes.
Okay, so shall we start the third chapter?
Sure.
Okay.
Please
start. So one thing is very important to know, that in choosing association, we should always be respectful to the devotees who are helping us in our spiritual life on a regular basis. We should show special respect for them, because, see, we should not go by popularity. I mean, it's a tendency that, you know, many devotees, they just want to praise, worship, and respect the devotees who are very popular, even though they don't have any personal connection with those devotees. You know, just because they are very popular over the internet, YouTube, everywhere, all over the world. So that is why, you know, automatically this respect thing will come. But then when you actually physically meet them personally, you know, you'll have a different experience altogether. And then you realize that, you know, the devotees who are helping us in spiritual life on a regular basis, they are the ones actually who are, you know, like, they are the, you know, object, they are our, actually, you know, we should worship them, because, so that is the reason, you know, it is said that Siksha Guru, you know, they take a very important role in one's spiritual life, because they are providing Abhidaya, you know, how to perform bhakti. And you see that in ISKCON, because most of the sannyasis or gurus, they are traveling, many Diksha Gurus are traveling for preaching. So, I mean, how much time they are able to give to their disciples? Very less. And even if they are able to give, still, you know, they don't know the details of each and every devotee, what they are doing, you know, what service they are doing and all that. So they, the you know, what happens is then these disciples, you know, maximum guidance is coming from the devotees, you know, who are senior to them. So these are the devotees who should be worshipped, actually. They should be respected more, in one sense. So we have to be, you know, we have to always, you know, think about this, you know, because it's a tendency everywhere, you know, like, you don't even, you know, like for example, you know, some devotees will specially arrange a lecture when some very, you know, senior devotee will come, you know, specially arrange lecture in their house and, you know, provide all facilities and everything. But then the devotees who are regularly guiding, they won't even invite them sometimes to their house for katha or prasad or anything. So that is not the right etiquette, actually. So what is happening here is, you know, see, Guru Tattva is not just your Diksha Guru. See, it's not just about one guru, because if you have multiple devotees who are guiding you, then Guru Tattva is a holistic picture. It means that you have to satisfy each and every devotee that is helping you in spiritual life. Then the ultimate guru, Krishna, will be pleased. If you neglect some devotees who are not, you know, who are helping you regularly, and because they are just ordinary devotees, you know, they are just like regular mentors, you know, and if you neglect them, and if you just try to worship the guru, you know, even if there is no connection between you, you are not taking siksha also, you know, even from your Diksha Guru. So then that kind of thing is not going to please Krishna at all. So that is the reason, see, in CC class, we are going to understand all these things in detail about Guru Tattva. So Guru Tattva means it involves the siksha and Diksha Guru both. And it depends which particular devotee is taking major role in your life, in your spiritual life. So you are, and obviously, you know, it also depends on the faith of the devotee. faith of the disciple towards that Shiksha Guru or the Diksha Guru. But we have to understand this point that the devotees who are helping us in a regular sadhana, regular spiritual life, they are the most important ones. Okay, because of their association, we are able to sustain in our Krishna consciousness and also advance. If they were not there, just imagine a situation where your Diksha Guru will come and, you know, he will instruct you something. And then that instruction might seem a bit tough for you to follow. Okay, so then let's say you don't take guidance from any devotees. You know, you are just on your own. And you don't even meet your Diksha Guru, you know, after maybe 1 or 2 years, you will come and, you know, like, so throughout that 1 or 2 year period, you are alone and you face so many practical difficulties, problems in your life. So who are the ones who are helping you in those stages, in those phase? So, and at the same time, they are helping you to maintain your sadhana. They are helping you to advance in spiritual life. Correct? So they should be the object of worship, actually, you know, so. Depending on that, we have to decide and we have to give that much importance to them. Okay, so this is, you know, because this is a very misconception in ISKCON, a big misconception that, many popular big devotees, you know, they are very advanced and, you know, others are like, who are regularly helping us, they are like, you know, okay, we can neglect them or we don't care about them or something like that. So that is not correct. It's an offense. Because if we discriminate between the Shiksha and the Diksha Guru, then we commit an offense, actually. Okay, so this we have to understand very thoroughly. Okay, so...
What you said is so perfect. But only one doubt sometimes crops up is that, you know, people say, in spiritual world, you should not be trying to bring such discrimination. Now, that is where we get confused.
Spiritual world... Not trying to bring discrimination means what?
See, now, for example, whatever we discussed for the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
Now, you said, you know, the devotee is very popular. He travels around the world. He is a preacher.
Yeah.
So now, but when we interact with them personally.
Yeah.
We realize there are some things which are not really what they are supposed to be.
Correct.
Now, then what happens is immediately you said you should not judge and you should discriminate.
Yeah.
We start the process of discrimination.
Correct.
But then when you listen to people, observe what is happening on the side in your neighborhood, you realize that people are saying, okay, see, in the spiritual world, you know, you should not take this thing seriously. Now, then the question is, what is the difference of spiritual world? A man is a man, a guru is a guru, a devotee is a devotee. That doesn't change. Whether we are in the material world or in the spiritual world.
Okay, so see, Prabhuji, basically in the spiritual world, we are all pure devotees. We have reached the stage of prema. So you understand this point that we are perfected beings, but in the material world, as a sadhaka, we are still at the stage of bhajana kriya anartha nivritti. So we are struggling with anarthas. Okay, and because we are struggling with anarthas, we will have so many bad habits and we might do something which are not according to Vaishnava etiquette. Okay, so if we see that kind of improper behavior in devotees, then we have to stay at distance from them. We have to discriminate. So this discrimination only comes in the material world. Because spiritual world, everyone is perfect. They are all pure devotees. So everyone's, you know, desire is to serve each other. Okay, and there is no ego, there is no envy. Because all that is dissolved once you reach the stage of prema. Okay, so after reaching prema, only you go back to spiritual world. So that is the reason this discrimination is only in the material world. And one more thing I would like to add that, many devotees are popular. They are like, you know, preaching here and there. And, you know, so if we have, you know, one bad experience with them, we should not judge immediately. We should, that is the reason, you know, we have to take shelter of Guru Sadhu Shastra. So especially we take help of Guru and Sadhus in this matter. To understand. So if you approach devotees and if they all say that you know they also had some bad experience with this devotee, so-called popular devotee, then you can, you know, understand that, yeah, so, you know, his mentality is not correct, so I should stay away from him. But if you hear many good points about that devotee, then you should understand that, okay, sometimes, you know, it happens. Like that devotee might be, you know, because of circumstances, I did not get a good experience. But maybe the next time I meet him, you will get a good experience than before. So there are things like this. So we have to understand in terms of regular association. See, we cannot judge on the first meeting itself. So regularly when we see the same things are happening, then we understand that, okay, you know, I cannot, you know, take association. So immediately one should not judge. So does this make sense?
Yes, Prabhuji, very much.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, yeah.
If you permit me for 1 minute, I will tell one share an experience.
Sure, yeah.
We were in Chitrakoot. And there we had this jignasa. Now, what do we do? So, there, fortunately, we were told that there is a very old sadhu who is not part of ISKCON, but then he's very reputed. I don't remember his name. If you go to the internet and say Chitrakoot and you say Baba and Sadhu, you will definitely find his name.
Hmm.
So we went to meet him.
Okay.
And this Babaji is maybe 50, 60 years old. His mustache touches the ground.
Okay.
His hair touches the ground and is folded.
Okay.
And he's 6 months in penance and 6 months he's out giving darshan.
Okay.
So we felt, you know, he's such a knowledgeable person. So let us ask him this. Because he is not from our association of devotees.
Yeah, okay.
So when we asked Prabhuji, he mentioned exactly what you have told now.
Okay.
He says, don't get confused. Values, you know, how a guru has to be with devotees, these are all eternal. Nothing changes. So if people are trying to confuse you by saying spiritual, you should not judge, you should pardon, then these are all good words. But your heart tells you that, you know, this is the way I am and you cannot afford to change that just because someone says it is spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and this happened 6 months ago and now we are in a group of devotees having this conversation and you also mentioned the same thing.
Yeah, so see, the association is also of different types. Like you associate with non-devotees, that association is on a different level, and your association with devotees also on a different level. Okay, so as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in CC that any devotee chanting the holy names should be respected within the mind. So, okay, but at the same time, we have to understand which level that devotee is. If he's Kanishta, then no, and if you are a Madhyama, then you cannot take association from him. You have to give your association to him. Okay. If there are people who are not devotees, then we just do the formality externally. Okay. We don't try to intimately associate with them. You know, we just whatever is needful, we just do that, and we don't go beyond that. Okay. So and we don't associate with them actually. So true association means what? You come together, you chant the holy names, and you talk about Krishna. And all that. Okay. And as you know, all our acharyas have said that a devotee first should point toward his own self. How much anarthas I have, you know, instead of looking at others' faults or anarthas. So see, there is a difference between finding fault and discrimination. So this is what I'm trying to explain actually. That to see anarthas in others, that's not good actually. Then you are being judgmental. But to discriminate and... Yeah, so we have to see our own faults, okay? And if some devotees, you know, we are not able to associate with some devotee, then just keep distance. We don't have to analyze, you know, as I was saying earlier, that this, you know, this devotee has this nature and that nature and, you know, he's like so fanatic and all that. So we don't have to go into that. We just have to maintain distance from that devotee. That's it. So whoever inspires us in our Krishna consciousness, we have to associate with them.
Perfect.
Yeah, so a devotee always sees his own faults first. Okay, he never sees faults in others because, you know, this process is actually compared to the fire of, you know, the Krishna consciousness is compared to fire by, you know, the acharyas. They say that this process is like a fire and the fire, you know, if it keeps burning, then it will burn away all the reactions of past conditioning, everything to ashes. So what does it mean? That even if as a neophyte devotee, when we start bhakti, you know, all the anarthas, if we are sincere, then all the anarthas will be destroyed with time by the association of devotees. Okay, so we have to always see the good things in others. So that is the reason. First, we have to make sure that if any particular devotee is inspiring you, and if you are able to maintain that inspiration throughout your life, then you can take his shelter and association. Okay, and at the same time, because the senior devotees or the non-liberated devotees, they are conditioned themselves. Okay, so they will also show anarthas. You know, like they will get angry, they will chastise someone, they will criticize, or they, out of ego, sometimes some things you see, you know, out from outside, you'll understand that, you know, certain, you know, things are, anarthas are also there in each and every devotee. But we cannot actually correct seniors, okay, and we cannot find fault with them. So whatever faults you see from outside, you just have to ignore that. And you have to see the main thing in the seniors. You have to see whether the seniors, they are able to inspire you. If you are very much inspired, then you have to ignore the you know, the faults and the bad qualities they have. You have to overlook them, basically. Okay. So association is of different types. If you are with your equal, if you see some, you know, anartha in them, and if he's open to your suggestion, then you can suggest to him. And at the same time, you should be also able to accept it, you know, whatever suggestion he gives. So, and then junior, we have to guide them. We have to, you know, show them, you know, the proper way. So this is how we associate with three different categories of devotees. Okay. Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so is Swati Mataji there? Not yet. Param Devki Mataji?
Hare Krishna.
Oh, Swati Mataji was there. Okay. Yeah, Haribol.
Are you Pramila Mataji is calling you, I think.
Who is calling?
Pramila Mataji, Pramila.
Pramila Mataji, Param Devki Mataji.
I don't know her name, but Pramila Mataji is, she's telling that I'm not able to connect her with this call.
Oh, yeah, I mean, what can we do, yaar? Because it's very straightforward method, actually. Can you, is it possible someone can explain to her? Such a simple process.
It's possible.
Okay.
I can give a screenshot to
her. Yeah, if you can just WhatsApp her how to, you know, quickly connect. It's almost 1 hour, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know, like. Okay. So, is Jumnu Mataji there?
I'm here, Prabhuji.
Okay. So, Kishan Agarwal Prabhu, he has joined or not? He's not joined. Okay, so any comments, any questions on this topic?
Prabhuji, I was just thinking of one. I had a reflection to share.
Yeah, sure.
So in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, it describes a sage of steady mind, and it also describes that how a person at a certain level of advancement sees a brahmana and a dog eater with the same vision. Right? So what we are describing here is that we all aspire to become like that, but, you know, we are not there yet. So in our interactions with others, we will... I like your point about we need to focus on who inspires us and not necessarily the qualities, because we ourselves are impure.
So exactly.
What I'm trying to share is that.
Correct. Yeah. That's very good point, Mataji. That, see, that quality which is described in Bhagavad Gita, that, you know, a saintly person sees, you know, everything in everywhere equally, right? So that quality is particularly of the Uttama Adhikari. And because we are not yet at the stage of Uttama Adhikari, we are kind of, you know, in the stage of Uttama Kanishta and Madhyama, somewhere that, you know, depending on Bhajana Kriya Anartha Nivriti. So, because we are on the lower stages, that is the reason, you know, we cannot artificially imitate those stages. So, that is the reason one has to discriminate. So, for a Uttama Adhikari, his vision is that he sees that everyone else other than him is more qualified and more advanced to serve the Lord. So that is why the Uttama Adhikari cannot discriminate at all. Okay, and see, that is the reason why the preaching is done by a Madhyama Adhikari. It is not done by the Uttama Adhikaris. And when I say this, it does not mean that Uttama Adhikari cannot do the preaching. What it means is, the Uttama Adhikari, he has to come to the platform of Madhyama Adhikari to preach. Because only a Madhyama Adhikari can discriminate and distinguish between an innocent and an envious person. Uttama Adhikari can never do that because he is himself thinking that he is the lowest and everyone is more advanced than him. And they are all serving the material energy of the Lord. So he sees everything spiritual and, you know, in every living being he will see that quality. So Srila Prabhupada did the same thing. You know, he was Uttama Adhikari of the highest stage and he came down on the platform Madhyama Adhikari and he discriminated and, you know, that's how we give the mercy. So that is the reason in one of the classes, you know, we had this discussion about bhakti comes from bhakti. So there is a question that why does the Lord discriminate in giving his mercy to all the living entities? Because we see that some receive and some do not receive. Okay, so then we discuss the point that actually the Lord has given this right of distributing mercy to his devotees. Okay, and because only the Madhyamas can do that, because they can discriminate, that is the reason why bhakti is manifested only to certain living entities. It is bestowed to only certain living entities, not to everyone. So we can see, you know, how this connection is there. So as practicing sadhakas, we try to follow in the footsteps of great souls. We take associate advanced devotees, we see how they behave, and then we try to implement that behavior. We try to serve them, inquire submissively from them, serve them, and we follow in their footsteps, but we don't imitate them. Okay, so this we have to always be careful about. We should not imitate, because once we start imitating, you know, immediately we'll fall down from that platform because we are not yet reached the stage. See, that is the reason why Vishwanath Thakur says that you cannot reach the stage of asakti and ruchi without crossing nishtha. This is a very, very important point. You have to understand that bhakti or the qualities, they are not manifested for some timing. Like, you know, you cannot say that, you know, you got some, you know, feelings of separation for the Lord for some time. So that means that you have reached the stage of asakti or bhava. You cannot say like that. Why? Because the symptoms that you are experiencing, those symptoms should show steady behavior. So it means that you have to cross the stage of nishtha, basically. So you have to show steadiness in your spiritual life, in whatever you do. If you are chanting offenselessly, that offenseless chanting should be steady throughout your life. It's not that you know, 1 or 2 days you chant offenselessly and then third day you commit offenses. So that is the reason you cannot attain the higher stages, you know, without nishtha. So steadiness is the most important aspect of spiritual life. So we have to practice steadiness, and that, you know, we practice by following the footsteps of the great souls. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Prabhuji. And also every opportunity where the interaction may be less than pleasant, we can also understand that to be an opportunity for improving our tolerance.
Correct. Yeah. Very good point, Mataji. That is the reason when the Prabhupada and all acharyas explain this point, that many times, you know, Krishna will send us. See, like I read once quote by Mahatma Prabhu, and, you know, he had written that if you genuinely desire humility, then Krishna will send some person to humiliate you. So everything we have to see in context of the Lord purifying us, you know, at each and every moment. If there is some suffering coming to us, if there is some insult coming to us, if there is some physical suffering coming to us, or whatever it is, we have to always consider it as the Lord's arrangement. And we should not get frustrated, or we should not fight for, you know, against that. So we should actually kind of, you know, welcome it with the thought that, you know, it is the Lord arranging for my purification. So then quickly we'll advance in spiritual life. But if we keep, you know, our senses are agitated and, you know, we try to fight back, then, you know, it will take long time to advance. So whatever happens, that is for our benefit. That is what we have to actually, you know, finally we have to think like that. Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you, Mataji, for these, you know, sharing nice points.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Okay. All right. So Param Devki Mataji, she has joined now.
No problem.
Okay. Achha, theek hai. Chalo, let's start with the third chapter if there are no further questions. Okay, so now in the third chapter we learn about, you know, the same thing which we are discussing about, you know, like now we'll get to know more details about discrimination. So basically the third chapter speaks about the different categories of devotees, the Kanishtha, Madhyama and Uttama. So now all of you, you know, if you'd like to share something, what do you understand by Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttam, then you can share some points. So who is a Kanishtha? How do we identify a Kanishtha Adhikari?
Kanishtha is a devotee who doesn't know the position of senior devotee, who just know only Krishna Vigraha and only his mentor. Not more how he should respect other devotees or what is their position.
Yeah, very good. Okay, yeah. So he cannot discriminate basically, and he is focused more on deities. You know, he will show respect to the deity, but he will not show respect to devotees. And then which other major points about Kanishtha Adhikari?
His faith is not strong.
Material benefit.
Yeah, so I think Nidhi Mataji said the faith is not strong, very weak.
Yeah,
so that's correct. That is the foremost quality, you know, to discriminate. That how do you understand who is Kanishtha, Madhyama and Uttama? By their faith. So their faith is weak, which means that if some other person, you know, he will present something to him, you know, some logic, then he will kind of be convinced with that. Okay. So it's very easy to disturb his faith. Yeah. And then as Sakshiman Prabhu said, material desires. Yeah. So material desires, yeah, it will be there in Kanishtha because his motivation might be to, you know, attain happiness, to mitigate suffering and all that. So that might be possible, yeah. And another major important point about Kanishtha Adhikari is what?
One important point is that I actually felt that Kanishtha Adhikari thinks himself the supreme most devotee. The purest devotee.
Sorry?
The Kanishtha Adhikari, he thinks himself as pure devotee and others as mediocre devotee.
Yeah, so basically he does not show proper respect to others. Right, okay. But there is one more very significant quality by which we can identify who is a Kanishtha.
Does not have proper knowledge of scriptures.
Yeah, correct. Yes. So that is the most important point, that he is very weak in scriptures. He does not know and he cannot present scripture logic and all that. So that is the reason why his faith is also very weak. Okay. See, now it is interesting to know this, that the faith actually kind of depends on the scriptures in the initial stage. That is the reason why Vaidhi Bhakti, you know, when we start Bhakti, we start with Vaidhi Bhakti. And Vaidhi Bhakti means what? The faith is more, you know, towards scriptures and logic. Okay, so that is the reason, you know, because their faith is very weak in scripture, and that is the reason their faith is weak in the Lord himself. Okay, so he does not have scriptural knowledge. Yeah, so that is Kanishtha. Okay, so what is the characteristics of a Madhyama?
Madhyama has a strong faith, but he is not expert in arguing or making his points understand to other devotees or other people.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Then?
And no one can move with faith.
Huh?
No one can move this faith.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And another point?
Only he can discriminate.
Yeah, so that is also another important point. Yes, so he knows proper discrimination, that who is a devotee, who is non-devotee, who is innocent, who is envious, and you know, he can also choose his association wisely, and he respects devotees. He knows that devotees are worshipable objects, right? And they are like more actually more worshipable than the Lord himself. So these are the characteristics of Madhyama Adhikari. His faith is strong, very strong. But he cannot systematically and convincingly present the conclusion of the Shastra. He cannot logically defeat someone in argument. So this is the characteristic of Madhyama Adhikari. And what about Uttama Adhikari?
He's well versed in scriptures.
Okay.
He understands...
Actually, Madhyama Adhikari is also well-versed, but he is not fully conversant with the scriptures and fully conversant with the logic and conclusion of the scriptures. Uttama Adhikari, on the other hand, is very thoroughly conversed with scriptures, and he can easily defeat others and convince others from, you know, logic and argument. Okay? Yeah, and then obviously, you know, the three levels are depending on the faith of the devotee. So you see, the faith of the Uttama is highest in the Lord. Okay? And then he can see, now as we were discussing, that Uttama Adhikari has all the knowledge of the scripture, but he will not discriminate. You know, if he is Uttama Adhikari, you know, he will, by nature, by his natural tendency, he will not discriminate anyone. But then when in the, for the service of the Lord, he will also discriminate. So this we have to understand, that if he has been ordered to preach by his spiritual master, then he will descend from Uttama Adhikari to Madhyama Adhikari and he will start preaching. Okay, so for service purpose, we do this. See, all these things that we are discussing, you know, these are all theoretical stuff, which is given in the scripture. And we should know theoretical stuff also, because that's a roadmap. That is where we are supposed to go. And it's all at each and every stage, it's a pointer in our spiritual life, that, you know, there are, this stage, you know, we are exhibiting this symptom. So we understand that we are at the stage of anartha nivritti. Then at Nishtha, there are certain symptoms, you know, of steadiness. So we understand we are the state of Nishtha. Then, so like all these are pointers in the map to show us the proper direction. But it does not mean that, you know, we have to follow each and everything, you know, in order to attain this stage and all. So this is completely, see, ultimately, the final thing is... So final thing is, you know, just a moment. The most important thing in the spiritual life is basically how much one is dedicated to his guru, and the guru is the final, you know, decision maker. So guru will decide whether he wants to. Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, I got disconnected in between, so the connection broke. Prabhuji, can you please repeat your point again?
So the last will how much did you hear?
The final quality of Uttama, that his natural tendency is not to discriminate, but if asked to preach, then he does this.
Yeah, so Uttama Adhikari will, for the pleasure, you know, for the sake of service, if he's ordered by the spiritual master, he'll discriminate. And he'll come to the platform of Uttama Adhikari. So I was saying that, so these are all the pointers in spiritual life, these, you know, roadmaps, basically. You know, the theoretical things that we are discussing in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But ultimately, the spiritual master will decide whether he wants to give full mercy to the disciple. So that is the reason the final... you know, the final thing, the final objective should be to please the spiritual master in all circumstances, in each and everything. Okay, so we should not see, we know that, you know, chanting is a yug dharma. We know that, you know, constant chanting is the goal. But if the spiritual master does not want that for the time being, then you cannot go against his order and, you know, keep chanting. Because if he wants you to engage in some service, then you cannot demand that you would like to do this or that. You can humbly present to him that this is your inclination, but then whatever he says, you have to follow that. So because, see, why the spiritual master is the one who is going to take us back to God. It is not by our own efforts and bhakti that, you know, we'll reach that stage. See, what sadhana we are doing in the material world is like insignificant. If you see the sadhana of the, you know, the inhabitants of the previous yugas, you'll understand from 100,000 years they were doing tap, austerities, meditation, yajna and all that. So according to that, what is our sadhana? Nothing. Okay. So our sadhana, the final goal is to attract the mercy of a pure devotee. Okay. And that is the reason the spiritual master is the final authority on everything. Even if you are not reaching the higher series like Ruchi, Asakti or, you know, Bhava or Prema, but if the spiritual master is sufficiently pleased with our attitude, with our menial service, then he can make that adjustment also. By his mercy, you know, he will actually make that arrangement that we will go back to Godhead. Okay, so this is the final authority, the spiritual master. So we have to understand that.
Maybe we are talking about Diksha Guru or Siksha Guru.
Okay, so now this is an important question. So what do you think? Is that the Diksha or the Siksha Guru? Who can make that arrangement? Who can make that final, you know, adjustment?
Siksha Guru.
Okay, but the Diksha Guru takes full responsibility for the disciple. And Siksha Guru does not have obligation to take full responsibility.
But Siksha Guru is who is the one who are in always constantly in touch. He knows our anarchas, he knows what all. So he knows.
But if Siksha Guru himself is a sadhaka, then he cannot take us back to Godhead. So he has to strictly follow, and he should be willing to take the responsibility for us. If he does not take the responsibility, then who is going to take us back to Godhead? So you know, this is a very important point to understand that finally it is the devotee's faith in his Diksha or Siksha Guru. So for a devotee, the most prominent object of worship can be the Diksha Guru or the Siksha Guru. Okay, and that Siksha Guru, you know, he should be able to take us back to Godhead. So which means that, you know, you should have a deal with him, basically. You know, you have to, and if he wants you to take back to Godhead, then obviously he will also demand surrender. Correct? Because unless you surrender to the devotees, they cannot take you back to Godhead. Spiritual life is meant, you know, it's all about surrender to Krishna. So the spiritual master is teaching us how to surrender to Krishna. And that is the reason, see, spiritual life is not just about taking knowledge from here and there and not doing any practical service and not surrendering to the instructions of spiritual master. Okay, because taking knowledge is also the work of Mayavadis. Mayavadis also do the same thing. They will take so much knowledge from Shastra, and then they will also have a guru. But then once they reach, you know, once they cross beyond the guru, they will also reject the guru because they think they don't need the guru further. But ours is not like that, you know. Ours is based on commitment and surrender because we are trying to serve the Lord and the devotees. So that serving principle is always going to be eternal. Okay. So service is the thing that is actually going to give us that realization, practical realization and advancement in spiritual life. So see, ideally what is supposed to be that whoever you are taking guidance from or getting inspiration from, you have to serve the devotee. You have to regularly serve the devotee. You have to ask submissively questions and they will give you the knowledge. And they will clear your doubts. Okay, and you have to serve in return. So if we do not serve the devotees, then, you know, we are just taking knowledge from them, but we are not serving anyone. Correct? So we have to, that relationship has to be there. And the spiritual master engages in Krishna service. He does not engage in his own service for his own comforts and facilities. Okay, so spiritual master is all, you know, also the representative of the Lord. So he will engage us for Krishna service. Okay, so So now, depending on the devotee's or the disciple's faith, if he has more faith in the Siksha Guru, then and if the Siksha Guru is willing to take him back to Godhead, then yeah, the Siksha Guru can take him back to Godhead. And by default, the Diksha Guru is always going to take him back to Godhead. Why? Because that's the vow that he has taken at the time of initiation. Okay. So as long as the commitment is not broken from both ends, you know, from the Guru or the disciple, till that time, the Diksha Guru always takes that responsibility to take his disciple back to Godhead. Okay. And the Siksha Guru can also take that, but it's optional. They are not obliged to take the disciple back to Godhead. Or they are not obliged to take full responsibility of the disciple. Okay, so now, see, ideally what happens is, whichever devotee you are most inspired, who is, you know, giving, the maximum inspiration in your spiritual life, you should approach that devotee and you should take diksha from him. And how do you decide that who is the devotee that is inspiring me the most? By his siksha. By, you know, what he's emphasizing, what he's saying, his siksha, basically. Whatever knowledge he's giving, you know, if that knowledge is attracting you and it is resonating with you in your heart fully, then you accept the spiritual master as your diksha guru. So then, once you accept someone as your most prominent object of worship, so then that becomes a reference point for your spiritual life. Okay, and then accordingly you will decide all your other siksha gurus with reference to that main point. Okay, so let's say, for example, you get most inspiration from X guru. Okay, so that X guru is your reference point. And now that X guru is, you know, you are getting his, you are hearing to his lectures regularly, but you are not able to get personal guidance from him. So obviously you will need some devotees, let's say YZ devotees. So now these YZ devotees, you will choose in such a way that they will repeat the words of that X guru. Your main most prominent object of worship. So Y and Z should not contradict what the ex guru is saying. You understand this point? So this is how it works. This is the ideal system. Okay, but many times it happens, and it is happening in ISKCON because of lack of education, that devotees, they choose the guru, you know, because out of formality or because of peer pressure. I know many friends. They say, oh, Prabhu, take initiation, you know, you will get so soon and you will get mercy, you will advance, you know. So all these things are, like, you know, heard, and then, you know, we want to take initiation. Also, at the same time, we want that, you know, respect that, oh, no, now I'm initiated, so devotees will respect me more, you know. So that, all these ulterior motives are also there. So then we take initiation, and that initiation, without even trying to understand what the siksha is of the guru. So the relationship is merely out of formality. It's not because you are inspired by siksha. Okay. So now this is a rare case, or a special case, you can say. You know, it's not a rare case actually in ISKCON, but it's a special case where you have elected or you have decided to take diksha from a guru just because of some outer, you know, external reasons. Okay. So you choose that. And then later on, after some time, you get fascination or attraction or inspiration from some other guru. Okay. So that guru inspires, that main inspiration comes from that guru because you get connected to his siksha. Okay. So siksha is the thing that will keep you maintained forever in your spiritual life. So then that siksha guru will inspire you more than your diksha guru. Okay. So then your frame of reference will shift. Instead of the X guru, it will shift to the Y guru. Okay, and then you have to see whether your whatever devotees that you decide, you know, your other siksha gurus, they should tally with what the Y guru will say. You know, it should not contradict what the Y guru will say. And then, you know, your diksha guru also should, you know, actually he should also repeat what the Y guru will say. Or, you know, he will actually kind of, you know, support his siksha. Okay, even if there is a difference in opinion, but he will support you. No? So this is how it works, basically. So there are different concepts here involved, and you have to understand very clearly that who is your main object of worship. So we have to choose that as a reference point, and then accordingly other siksha gurus will So see, now those devotees who have not yet decided on a guru, take your time, decide very intelligently. The most important factor to choose a guru is the siksha. Okay, so this is the most important point you have to remember. If you do not choose a guru based on his siksha, then later, you know, you will be wandering here and there. It will be very difficult. So we have to stay focused and connected to one thing. So like, you know, for example, in ISKCON, we follow only Srila Prabhupada, right? See, actually, the spiritual life is mainly based on inspiration. Okay, and it is based on siksha. So, even though this is right, but at the same time, you know, we say that we only follow Srila Prabhupada's instruction. We don't go outside of ISKCON to get knowledge or to get, you know, inspiration. Why? Because Prabhupada has given a set of instruction, you know, which is going to be for the next 10,000 years. And he has accommodated, you know, the inclination of each and every devotee according to their nature. You know, he has given that kind of instructions to everyone. So in ISKCON, you know, the foremost thing is that we have to preach. So ISKCON is a preaching movement. And our main focus is on preaching in ISKCON. If you go outside of ISKCON, then there are devotees or there will be gurus who will talk about doing bhajan and, you know, many other things. So it will lead to confusion. So that is the reason why in ISKCON, we follow only Prabhupada. You know, we don't take siksha outside ISKCON. And then within ISKCON also, you see there are variety of gurus. There is so much difference in opinion amongst the gurus. Lot of varieties. Okay. So then that is the reason. And then, you know, according to Shastra, it says that you should get connected to a guru and you should render service to that guru and you should follow his instruction. So you cannot follow each and every one of them, right? Even though everyone is representing Prabhupada, but you cannot satisfy each and every guru or each and every devotee whom you are inspired. So that is the reason you have to then very, you know, intelligently you have to decide, take your time and, you know, then make a decision that which is the devotee or the guru who is inspiring the most in spiritual life. So you take initiation from them, that particular devotee, and then that becomes your reference point. And then other devotees that are helping you in spiritual life, they should also ideally be repeating what your main reference point is saying. It should not contradict the teachings. Okay, see, because the siksha and the diksha guru, they are identical manifestation of the Lord. Okay, so their main role or objective is to help the devotee advance in spiritual life. They are not meant to, see, the different siksha gurus and, you know, the one diksha guru, they are not meant to confuse the disciple by giving different instructions or different opinions. So the idea is that the contradiction should be resolved somewhere and you have to follow one thing. Okay, so this is how we should actually select our guru. And once we select that, then we humbly approach them and, you know, obviously Diksha Guru is taking full responsibility. But if the Siksha Guru, you know, if you are more inclined towards the Siksha Guru, then we have to approach them and we have to ask him whether he is, you know, willing to take full responsibility. If he takes, then, you know, he will take us back to Godhead. And the Diksha Guru is anyways going to take, right? So this is how, you know, all these things are arranged. So this is Guru Tattva, basically. Okay, so I hope this answers your question, Akash Prabhu.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. So any other devotee has any question about this or any comment?
So Prabhuji, I just had a question. Quick question. So what in essence you just said is, if I understood it correctly, that Diksha Guru will take full responsibility, but Siksha Guru also can take full responsibility if you ask him for it. Is that correct?
If we ask him for it, and he should be ready to take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this point and the other important point is the reference point. So I hope that is clear. You know, how do we select our main reference point in spiritual life?
Yes, Prabhuji, very clear.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so basically it means that the devotees who are helping us in spiritual life, so we are obliged to them first and foremost. Okay, so now the Krishna Bhajanamrita book, which is written by Narhari Sarkar, it says in the book that even if let's say, you know, you have decided your Diksha and Siksha Guru. Like, you know, you get most inspiration from your Diksha and Siksha Gurus. Okay. So the book says, or Natari Sarkar says, who is eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that while taking, you know, the guidance from your Diksha and Siksha Guru on a regular basis, if an advanced devotee comes to you, and he might be even advanced than your Diksha and Siksha Guru also, if he comes to you and if he instructs you something else than what your Diksha and Siksha Guru says, then it is you, the disciple is not obliged to follow that advanced devotee. Okay, he can humbly you know, refuse to follow him, and whatever he has heard from the advanced devotee, he should humbly present it to the Diksha and Siksha Guru, and then he should ask the Guru whether he, you know, any of the things that he mentioned one could follow. So then the Guru is the final authority on these things. So what Narahari Sarkar says is that by one's heart and soul, one should follow the Diksha and Siksha Guru. Okay, so this is the etiquette, that special respect should be given to the Diksha and Siksha Guru, irrespective of their level of advancement. So if some advanced Vaishnava will come, and if he tells us something different from what we have heard from our Diksha and Siksha Guru, then we are not obliged to accept that. We are not obliged to follow him. Okay, although we offer them respect according to the stature of advancement, but we don't have obligation to follow their instructions. Okay, so that's a very, very important point. Like, and you know, Narahari Sarkar gives an analogy that this relationship is similar to a father and a son relationship. That because my father has, you know, brought me up, he has provided me all facilities, given everything to me. So even if there is another person who is more rich than my father, even if he comes, you know, and he tells me something, for me, my father is the best father. Even if that other person is rich than my father, but for a disciple, his guru is the final authority, and you know, he offers special respect to them by following their instructions. So this is how it should be understood, that for me, my guru is the best, and all others are, like, you know, subordinate to his. See, that is the reason the meaning of the word guru means heavy with knowledge. And Radhanath Maharaj was once explaining in his lecture that what is the meaning of heavy with knowledge. Heavy with knowledge means that if there are many opinions of different devotees or different people, and if even if they are strong opinions, but if all of them say contradictory to what your guru said, then if you keep the opinion of our guru on one scale, then that scale will be, you know, that instruction will be the heaviest. So the scale will go down and all other opinions will go up. So heavy with knowledge means whatever your guru is saying, that is the final authority for you. That's the final you know, confirmation. So this is, it's so heavy that, you know, it can balance all other things like that. So this is the meaning, heavy with knowledge. Okay. So actually, you know, I have given a course on Guru Tattva. Almost around 10 sessions I have given in one devotee's house, in my in-law's house actually. So each session was like around 2.5 hours or something. And all these sessions are recorded, almost all of them. So if anyone would like to listen to them, then, you know, they can. I will share you the link. But it is, these lectures are in Hindi. So I don't know if anyone would be comfortable listening. Okay, so yeah, so everyone has understood this concept of the Guru Tattva in brief.
Yes.
Yeah. Sakshi Mohan Prabhu, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so.
You said this most important.
Okay, someone had a question?
Yes, I have a question.
Yeah.
Which class of devotee can take us back to Godhead, first or second?
Which class?
Yeah. Uttam Adhikari or Madhyam Adhikari?
What is the question?
which class of devotee can take us back to Godhead? Madhyam Adhikari or Uttam Adhikari?
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, this is a another very important question to understand. Okay. See, now, in ISKCON, see, basically, it's a preaching movement. Okay. So, preachers means, you know, mostly Madhyam Adhikaris will be there in the movement. And Uttam Adhikaris are also there, but they will also descend to Madhyam Adhikari level. And in order to preach, first of all, see, when we talk about preaching, we are actually referring to many devotees. Because for preaching, we require many, many devotees. Okay. So, because it is the order of Srila Prabhupada and it is the order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so the devotees who are non-liberated, okay, so they, if they strictly follow the liberated souls, then they are acting on the liberated platform. And they are also preachers and they can also take the responsibility of a guru. Okay, so that is the, this is the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, that he wanted every one of us to become guru. And guru, in ISKCON, guru does not mean, whoever is a guru does not mean they are on Uttam Adhikari. They can be Madhyam Adhikaris also. But yeah, so Madhyam Adhikari is the minimum standard to become a guru in ISKCON. But even Kanishthas can also become guru. You know, they can take the role of Shiksha Gurus in one sense, you know, because there are stages in Kanishtha Adhikari also, like, you know, Kanishth Kanishth, Madhyam Madhyam, Madhyam Kanishth and Uttama Kanishth. So probably the Uttama Kanishth ones can guide the Madhyam Kanishth ones like that. So this, see, whenever we talk about preaching, we are talking about expansion. And for expansion, we need a lot of devotees. Correct? So that is the reason you see in Prabhupada's time, he gave initiation very quickly. Like, you know, within, you know, some devotees, they joined the movement and, you know, after a couple of weeks, Prabhupada gave him initiation. And then Gayatri also, they gave, you know, Prabhupada gave like maybe after 6 months or 1 year. So very quickly. Why? Because Prabhupada wanted deities around the world. And as we discussed in our CC class, that in order to worship deities, you know, we have to give Gayatri to the devotees. So if you want to give Gayatri, then we have to initiate them with Brahmanical qualification, right? So these are all things, you know, they happened very quickly in Prabhupada's time because he was in the mood of expansion. So that is the reason he gave mercy very quickly, very, you know, easily to all of them. And then if whoever is strictly following the, you know, the liberated souls, they also can act as guru. And any guru who is strictly following the principles of bhakti, regulative principles, chanting, you know, sincerely following his, you know, spiritual master and the acharyas, then he can also take us back to Godhead. And in ISKCON, generally the gurus, they are actually kind of, you know, they see all the gurus in ISKCON currently, they are dependent on Srila Prabhupada. So basically everyone is assisting Prabhupada. Okay. So what they will be doing is, even though they are acting as representative of Prabhupada, so any disciple, you know, the guru will offer them to Srila Prabhupada. Okay. And Srila Prabhupada is the final authority, whether they will go back to Godhead or not. So in one sense, if Prabhupada is pleased with his disciples, you know, all his sannyasi gurus or, you know, gurus, disciple gurus, then, you know, like, you know, it's a chain. Like, for example, if I like a devotee very much, okay, so then I will pray to my spiritual master that, you know, and if my spiritual master, you know, he has a lot of affection for me and he will accept whichever devotee is under me, then it is my choice then, you know. So you understand this concept that it is the devotee's, the guru's final choice. So if my guru is very dear to Prabhupada, extremely dear to Prabhupada, then Prabhupada will accept any disciples, you know, the guru will offer him, you know, at the time of going back to Godhead. Okay. And then Prabhupada will not deny that. So this is the process. That is the reason why we worship Srimati Radharani, because Radharani is always praying to Krishna that here is a devotee, you know, please accept me. You know, he's much more advanced than me and please engage him in service. So this is the mood of Radharani and this is the mood of all the acharyas in our parampara. That so this is how it works. You understand this point? Yeah. So now if, let's say, for example, now the second generation devotees, third generation devotees. So now, at some point of time in the future, probably one of us might become a guru. Okay, so now you see, it right now it seems impossible that, you know, we will become a guru or something. But maybe if that is the order of a spiritual master, we become guru. And if you are very, you know, dear to the spiritual master, and our disciples, you know, if they are dear to us, so it's a chain, you know. Then what we'll do is we'll recommend our most, you know, most sincere disciple to our spiritual master. That then spiritual master will accept it because he, you know, because we are very dear to him. So he will, without any thinking, without any qualification, he will accept that disciple. And then his guru, Srila Prabhupada, will accept any disciple, you know. So that is how it, the chain will work. So you understand this point?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and in ISKCON, see, we are mostly dependent on the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so which is coming through Prabhupada, basically. Nityananda Prabhu's mercy and Mahaprabhu's mercy. So we are dependent on that. So any devotee who is following the principles of Guru, he can take us back to Godhead. So there is no law that only a Uttama Adhikari Guru can take us. No, it's not like that. Okay. Yeah, so any other questions or comments?
Prabhuji, you are already our Guru because you are giving us so much knowledge. So we cannot, it is impossible for us to become a Guru, but you are already a Guru.
Well, I am actually the least qualified to become a Guru. So I am just trying to share the knowledge, that's it. Way far away from it, actually. So, yeah. Okay, so any comments, any questions?
For subject.
Huh?
That shows the knowledge you have.
No. Anyways, let's forget about that. We'll focus on our main discussion. So, any devotee has any important question related to this?
Yes, sir. When you mentioned the most important points, so chose the Diksha Guru, and first you said that he must be heavy with knowledge, and second thing you said, I missed it. What is the other thing you said?
I couldn't hear your question properly. Can you say louder?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, can you hear me?
Yeah, now it is clear.
Prabhuji, you said that the most important point to choose the Diksha Guru is, and we were discussing that how can we choose our Diksha Guru. So you said that he must be heavy with knowledge, that his instruction must be equal to everyone's instruction. He should give priority to our Diksha Guru's instruction. And what are the other points you said about this? How can we choose our Diksha Guru?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So based on Siksha. So Siksha is the most essential element. So Siksha means what? Siksha means whatever they are saying in their lectures, the way they are dealing, you know, see, that is the reason we first test the Guru. It should, like, you remember in Journey Home, when Radhanath Maharaj first saw Srila Prabhupada, in his heart, he felt that he is my Guru, correct? But then his mind was still not, still did not accept that Prabhupada. So then, when his mind and heart both accepted Prabhupada, that time he actually went to Prabhupada and told him, you know, he accepted initiation. So this is how it should work, that everything should resonate. So in ISKCON, we see there are a variety of sannyasis, gurus. They say different things. They have emphasis on different points. So we have to choose. So which particular instruction their emphasis is resonating with us. If you think that is what you also believe and it's completely, you know, digestible to you, then, and, you know, he's inspiring a lot, then that's the one you should take initiation from. So we should not think that, oh, just because, you know, this particular sannyasi, you know, he's very popular, very, very, he has, you know, thousands of disciples. And, you know, he's like, you know, one of the topmost leaders in ISKCON. So that should not be the reasons. The only reason to choose a guru should be Siksha. Otherwise, in future, you will face problem. You will have problem in following the instruction of the spiritual master. And if you won't be able to follow, then you will also start committing aparad. Okay. So, see, but luckily in ISKCON, we have this Siksha Guru system also. Like, you know, we can take Siksha also from others. So, because they are all representing Prabhupada, you know, all of them. Although there is variety, there is difference. But still, all the differences, they resolve in Prabhupada. You know, because all of them are representing Prabhupada. But still, you know, if at some point of time in your spiritual life, you have to decide which devotee you want to follow. You cannot follow everyone. If you follow everyone, you are not following anyone. Okay, and spiritual life means you have to serve, you have to follow the instructions. You cannot whimsically act. You cannot randomly, you know, keep acting independently. You have to take shelter of devotees. You should take guidance of Vaishnavas. You have to follow the orders of Guru.
Okay, if a Guru is very difficult to be approached, and we know by heart that yes, they have accepted him as Guru within the heart. So, but yeah, he is very difficult to approach. So, what to do then?
Okay, so this is another very important question, because this is what we see in ISKCON most of the times, that we see that there are so many exemplary devotees, exalted devotees, gurus, sannyasis. We get connected to them, you know, everything is resonating in our heart. And but, you know, we know that we are not going to get direct guidance from the guru, right? So then how to understand these things? So now, see, so that is an individual choice. So actually, if you see, the vani of the guru is already there in the form of his lectures. So it does not require you have to personally associate with the guru. Because see, in ISKCON, instructions are already given by Prabhupada. You know, what he wants is very clear. If, see, if a devotee is, he wants to serve through book distribution, through Naam Sankirtan, through Varnashram, through Prasad distribution, any kind of preaching, any kind of service connected to temple. Okay, if the devotee wants to do that, then he does not need a separate instruction. Right? He can do it. And he can take it as the life and soul, you know, that, see, whatever his natural inclination is, that he can make it as a life and soul. So he does not need any personal instruction, because whatever instructions are, you know, we require for spiritual life, that whatever, you know, as our life goal, we can say, you know, what is the long-term goal and the goal of our life, you know, to please the spiritual master. So what does the spiritual master want? In ISKCON, it is very clear that he wants us to preach the glories of the Lord, to go deep in our sadhana and to share that with others, right? To share Krishna with others. So this is what in ISKCON, it's a common thing. So now this can be done in many ways, different ways. That is up to you. You can, you know, start seminars, you know, giving presentations. You can distribute books. You can talk to people personally, like that, different types of ways. So that's something that you have to decide. Okay. So now, where is the question of taking personal guidance? So personal guidance comes into picture when we practice our sadhana on a daily basis. So then, you know, there will be problems, there will be difficulties, there will be problems in ashram, you know, like many, many practical guidance we need to take. So then, so in this particular case, if a devotee gets attached, you know, by heart and mind to a guru and he wants to take diksha because of his siksha, no other you know, external reason, mainly because of his siksha. So that kind of initiation is, you know, proper. And the personal guidance that he requires in his spiritual life. So see, now there are two things to understand. That first of all, it's in one way it is good that you are not getting personal guidance, because you will learn how to be independent of the guru by being dependent on the devotees. Okay, so there is no question of independence in spiritual life. You have to always take guidance. Okay. So you imagine a situation, if your entire life, you know, you have been trained by a guru, he has guided you personally, and then you become very, you know, used to that. So you are not taking shelter of devotees, you are not approaching other devotees, and then suddenly one day you hear that your spiritual master is no longer in the material world. He is gone. And then you will be shocked. You know, you will not be able to handle that, because throughout your life, you never took any guidance from anyone, and then the spiritual master goes away. So then you are left, like, you know, in the middle of ocean. So you are like, you know, bewildered what to do and, you know, whom to follow and all that. So in that sense, it's an advantage. On long-term basis, it's an advantage that if your spiritual master is not able to give personal guidance, then it will train you to maintain your spiritual life for a long period of time. So that is one advantage. And the disadvantage is that many, many things, you know, you might not be able to figure out if you are not able to get direct guidance from the spiritual master. But that is not so important, because anyways, that guidance will come from your siksha gurus. So then what you do is, you select your diksha guru, whoever is most inspiring, you listen to his vani, what he wants from all his disciples. Because the first class disciple is the one who will know, what the guru wants, even before the guru telling us. The first class disciple, he will please the guru even before telling, the guru telling him that I want this. So this is the first class disciple. So we should understand through his lectures that what does he want from us. Okay, once we understand that, then whichever practical guidance we require in our day-to-day activities, that we can take the shelter of Shiksha Gurus. So we should choose the devotees who are repeating the words of our Diksha Guru, because he is the main point of reference. Okay, so those devotees will help us, to guide us, to uplift us in our spiritual life. Okay, so does this answer your question?
Prabhuji, I wanted to ask that if getting Diksha from the Guru is very difficult, so what to do?
So see, Diksha from the Guru is very difficult means, you don't want to surrender to him. See, that is the point. See, the problem here, it is, the practical problem in ISKCON is some gurus, they take long time to give initiation. And because of that, devotees don't want to take initiation, even though their inspiration is the main, the main inspiration is that particular guru. So that is not correct, actually. We have to wait. See, initiation means it is connection of heart. And once you are fully connected to someone by heart, then how can you decide you want to go to someone else? You understand this point? So you have to wait till he wants you to wait. So that is the reason why some of the gurus in ISKCON, they take long time to give initiation, because they want to see how much the disciple is willing to be patient and follow instructions and also correct. So this is the point. And see, if at some point in the time in the future, if you feel that actually, it's not recommended, I will tell you that it's not recommended, because basically, we are after a designation. It's not initiation, it's a designation. We want to be called as, Dasi. We want designation. We don't want initiation. So that should not happen, actually.
Sometimes if you have tried that before initiation, if I give up this body, or if the spiritual master leave the planet, then that will happen.
So first of all, if the spiritual master is present, then the disciple should wait. No matter how many years, the spiritual master wants the disciple to wait. Okay. If the spiritual master leaves the body, then obviously, he has to continue the legacy. So then obviously, then you can take shelter of some other devotee. It's like, the similar kind of thing that like yesterday in the class, we were talking about Harinam initiation, and then we were talking about the Gayatri initiation, right? So in ISKCON, both things are supposed to be given by the same guru, because he is the Diksha Guru. So Diksha Guru means actually the second initiation. Okay, so it is supposed to be given by the same guru. And it means that you will be taking Gayatri from the same guru from whom you took Harinam. Okay, so then your question is like, whether if you take Harinam from one guru, but then later on, you feel that some other is more inspiring, then you go take shelter and you want to take Gayatri from that guru. So that does not work. So if the spiritual master is present till the time, he is the main object of worship. But if he passes away, then one could take Gayatri from other guru. So this is the etiquette. Okay. So this is how we have to judge. We should understand that who is the main source of inspiration. Okay, because otherwise what will happen, just on the name of formality, because someone does not want to wait that long, they will take initiation from somewhere else, but their main focus will continue to be, that guru, who is making others wait long. And they will take initiation from someone who is giving initiation 2-3 years or something. So then, obviously it means that you want designation. You want to be recognized as an initiated devotee. So that should not happen. Okay. So now, see, in the course of that waiting period, like suppose you waited for 4-5 years, and if by chance you happen to meet a devotee who inspires you more than that particular guru, then yeah, then you can, you know, you can change and you can decide that you'd like to take Diksha. That should be the motivation. Not that, you know, okay, he's making me wait so long, so I will not take initiation, I will take from someone else. And I will continue to take Siksha from that guru. So that is the wrong objective. So you understand this point?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, okay, any questions on this? Any comments? Okay. So we started at 7:40, right? 7:45. So, okay. Now the third chapter has gone into the background, and many. But I think it was very useful class because many important points came up actually in this session. Many devotees have this kind of doubts and, you know, questions. So we were discussing about Uttama. So we'll continue another 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, and then we'll close our session. So, Uttama, Kanishta, and Madhyama. So we have all understood, you know. So these are the three different categories of devotees. So the root cause of faith, you know, as I explained earlier, it actually comes because of Shastra. Faith in the scriptures, you know. So basically everyone starts with Vaidhi Bhakti. Okay. So now, see, when we talk about Shastra, logic of Shastra, like, you know, logically presenting someone or logically deducing something from the Shastra, it does not mean independent logic, because independent logic has no place in our spiritual life, because then it becomes speculation. Okay, so logic according to the principles of Shastra, that which is favoring Shastra principles, which is not contrary to the Shastra, so that logic has to be applied. Okay, so we have to always use Guru Sadhu Shastra as reference. Yeah, okay. So now we come to the categories of Kanishta Adhikaris, which is what Prabhupada explains in the third chapter. So he says that the Kanishtas are of four types. You remember a Bhagavad Gita slok where four kind of people approach Krishna. So which are which are these four?
Desire of wealth. One who is inquisitive.
Yeah.
And one who is wise.
Yeah.
Who has knowledge.
Yeah.
One who is sorrow.
One who is?
One who is in distress.
Yeah. And the last?
Wise. One who is wise.
No, wise, inquisitive, distress. And the last?
Need of money.
Need of money, or, you know, need of happiness, busy searching for happiness. Okay. So, and which are the four examples that Prabhupada gives to illustrate this points? You know, the four different types of examples.
Prahlad is the first example.
Huh?
Prahlad,
no. There is no mention of Prahlad.
You said no, Prabhuji. He first wanted the material benefit.
No,
then,
he that is Dhruv Maharaj.
That is Dhruv Maharaj.
Yeah. So Dhruv Maharaj. Okay. So Dhruv Maharaj represents what? Someone who is looking for.
In need of position.
Correct. Yeah. So basically looking for material treasure. Okay. Then other three examples.
Distressed is Gajendra.
Gajendra, correct. Yeah, so Gajendra was distressed in distressful situation. So he remembered the Lord. Okay, so that is Gajendra. So Artha, Artharthi, now Jigyasu. Example of Jigyasu.
Sanak, Sananda, and Rishi.
Correct. Yeah. So Saunak Rishi and the sages which are assembled at Naimisharanya for the Bhagavatam class. Right? So they were inquisitive to know about the absolute truth. So this is Jigyasu, and then the last, the wise or the knowledgeable, Jnani. So what is the example?
That is Prahlad Maharaj?
No.
Buddha?
Actually, one could say Prahlad Maharaj also. But here, it's Prabhupada has given different example. And there is a reason why the Acharyas, you know, Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, Vishwanatha Chakrakur also, and Prabhupada also mentioned this example. So which is that example of a Jnani?
Sukadeva Goswami.
Sukadeva Goswami could be considered as an example, but Prabhupada is not mentioning about him.
Did you try?
Huh? Which one? The four Kumaras.
Okay. Four Kumaras?
Yeah. So they are the Jnanis. Okay. So now, see, Arth, Artharthi, Jigyasu, that three we understood. But what is Jnani? That we have to understand very properly. Because the Jnani that refers in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, this verse, particular verse, actually that Jnani does not mean impersonalist. It does not mean impersonalist. It means actually someone who is a devotee and who knows, who has knowledge about the Lord. Okay, so now, see, in this particular commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, Sridhar Swami explains, and there is explanation given by Jiva Goswami, and Vishwanatha Chakrakur also gives the explanation, and Ramanujacharya also gives the explanation. So Sridhar Swami says, who is the original commentator of the Bhagavatam, he says that this Jnani refers to the impersonalist, who actually has the knowledge about Atma, and who is single-mindedly focused on the Atma. But Ramanujacharya differs, and he says that actually this Jnani refers to a devotee who has the knowledge about Lord. And following in the footsteps of Ramanujacharya, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanatha Chakrakur also support the same point, that this Jnani referred in Bhagavad Gita is not the impersonalist, is actually the devotee. So how is that? That we'll see in the next class. So it's already like 9:50 now. It's already more than 2 hours. So, yeah. Okay, just one wanted to mention that if it is almost 2 hours, then our call might get disconnected at any time. So just be aware of that. Yeah, quickly.
Hare Krishna. Okay, please give example of the wife. Otherwise, there will be in suspense for the whole week.
You are a very wise person. So your Akash Prabhu is the example.
No, please.
Yeah, so
why are there four Kumaras, Prabhuji?
Yeah, I already gave that name of the four Kumaras.
Why devotee is Jnani? Who knows the
devotee? Yeah, so this is what we are going to discuss in the next class. Okay, so next week, because it will take a lot of time actually to explain it. Okay. So till then, keep waiting. Just as, you know, we wait for initiation. So similarly, for knowledge, keep waiting. It's a matter of 1 week only. Okay. So, yeah, any final comments, any final question?
In the book, it is said, Prabhuji, material, spiritual, and devotional. So spiritual and devotional are different, isn't it?
Yeah, that is what I will explain in the next class. Yeah. So any final last question, because I might get disconnected now.
There's one question for me.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ben.
Yeah.
How can we develop that love towards Krishna? Because in this material world, it's very difficult to remember Krishna in office hours or in study hours and somewhere else.
So how can we develop that love to Krishna? Because of we are in, as you said, we are Kanishka Adhikari.
Okay.
We are in Kataka state. So how can we develop?
Alekhya Madhuri? Rasaraj Prabhu, yeah, just hold on because I got disconnected. I will call back. No, you don't have to call back. I will, you can keep holding. I will call.
आपण ज्या उपभोक्त्याला कॉल केला आहे त्यांनी तुमचा कॉल होल्डवर ठेवला आहे कृपया लाईनवर रहा द सबस्क्राइबर यू हैव कॉल्ड हैज पुट यू ऑन होल्ड प्लीज बी ऑनलाइन आपने जिस उपभोक्ता को कॉल किया है उन्होंने आपके कॉल को होल्ड पर रखा है कृपया लाइन पे बने रहिए
Yeah, Rasaraj Go Prabhu, you are there now? Oh, okay, yeah, he's there. Okay, yeah, so Sumit Prabhu's question is that how to develop love for Krishna along with our many other responsibilities, like, you know, we are working outside, we have to get completely, you know, we are immersed, engaged in our work, so how to develop the love. So, our acharyas, our spiritual master, they suggest, they recommend this process that we associate with devotees on a regular basis. We do our sadhana very strongly, like especially 16 rounds attentively. Listen to lectures every day and also read scriptures every day. Okay, and if we do this, then automatically we will be able to remember Krishna. At least not continuously throughout the day, but at least in intervals we'll be able to remember. And then if we are working with the mindset that whatever work we are doing, we are engaging that work in Krishna's service, we are donating the profit in the service of the Lord, then that work becomes bhakti. Okay, so this is how we have to engage. So we should engage our work, and then we have to also get absorbed in the sadhana. So the most important part of any devotee is his sadhana. If sadhana is weak, then everything gets affected. Okay, and then we have to also consider health, because health is the foremost amongst everything. So first come health, then will come sadhana, and then come seva. So the health and sadhana should remain very good. And then we will be able to remember Krishna also, gradually. And then Krishna will also make arrangements for us. He will reveal to us what he wants from us, you know, in the future. So our attachment to him will increase if we sincerely follow the Krishna conscious path. If we do not commit offenses to Vaishnavas, if we praise devotees, if we glorify them, if we have good relationship with Vaishnavas, then all these things will help us. Okay.
Okay, thank you. My next question, final question is, how can we advance from Kanishka Adhikari to Madhyam Adhikari?
Yeah, so see, if any devotee who wants to progress in spiritual life, they have to take association with advanced devotees. So without serving them, without getting their mercy, it is not possible to advance. So that is the reason we have to serve the gurus. You know, our Diksha, Shiksha Guru, they are the first priority in our life. See, because we cannot satisfy each and every devotee, and we have to choose our priority. So the first and foremost priority is that we have to please our spiritual masters. that's the Diksha and the Siksha Gurus. So if we serve them nicely, follow their instructions, follow all these things, you know, sadhana and all that, then we will also gradually come to that stage. Okay.
केलेला क्रमांक सध्या दुसऱ्या कॉलवर व्यस्त आहे. कृपया लाईन वर राहा किंवा थोड्या वेळ.
हरी बोल. या एनी 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 डिवोटी हॅज एनी फायनल क्वेश्चन.
आय हॅव टू जंप ऑफ द कॉल सो आय वॉन्टेड टू से थँक यू एंड हरी कृष्ण.
या श्योर माधुरी, नो प्रॉब्लम. ओके सो वील टेक द फायनल क्वेश्चन एंड वील क्लोज.
Nobody will like this question is, you know, why we want to develop love for Krishna.
Yeah.
And today what we are doing is we are sailing in two boats. We are trying to keep working and, you know, we are also trying to develop Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
Now, there is a strong urge somewhere at the back of the mind that, you know, you can step off and, you know, you start doing this full time.
Okay.
So, do you want to say something on this? Is this right thinking, wrong thinking? Is it that, you know, once you become full-time, it is much better, or it is only, you know, the mind trying to play some maya and tricks with you?
Okay. Yeah, so see, this is also an important question. And, you know, I think every devotee, you know, who is working outside, I think each one of them, they have this feeling that, you know, enough of the material world. We would like to dedicate full-time. So that is natural, because both things are possible, that we have genuine desire to serve the Lord full time, and at the same time, as you said, that it can be the call of Maya also, that, you know, he just wants to, because see, the problem is that because we are so conditioned, so we want peace every time, we don't want to struggle, and we cannot take challenges, anxiety, okay, and to get rid of it, yeah, to get rid of that, we want relief, basically. See, this is our stage. This is our, you know, conditioned state, that we are into bhakti, although we say that we want pure devotional service, but at the back of the mind, we always are looking, hankering for peace. You know, we are every situation, we want peace. You know, like, yeah, okay. Like, everything is going good, you know, like, not much anxiety, you know, everything is balanced, proper, nice, you know. Circumstances are there. So this is our, you know, our conditioning tendency. So, you know, this morning only I was listening to Radhanath Maharaj's lecture, and, you know, he gave a whole class on this point only, that a devotee does not want peace. He wants the love of Krishna. And for that, he will take a lot of anxiety. He will take, you know, voluntarily he will take suffering also. And he will take a lot of anxiety. So he was giving example of Yashoda Maiya. And he was giving example of the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, that they want peace, but the devotees, they want service to the Lord. Okay, so now, see, depending on your, see, each and every one of us, we have some special talent, some special inclination we have. Okay, so we have to identify that. So on a long-term basis, if you cultivate that, then you will always be happy in Krishna consciousness. Okay, and you will do excellent in that field. Okay, so now if you think that through your work you can attract many people, or you like your work and you'd like to engage in Krishna service, then you continue your work, you know, till whatever period of time you would like to. Okay, so different devotees have different inclinations. If some devotee would like to offer service in a particular way, like, you know, they would like to serve the deities in the temple, or they would like to arrange preaching programs, like, you know, congregational chanting, like organizing Harinam Sankirtan or organizing book distribution. So if they want to get engaged full time in that, or some devotees want to train other devotees, educate them in all areas. So we have to identify which particular area we are expert at. Once we identify, then we should focus on that. And then we have to decide our long-term plan. So you get this point. So see, now, and another thing we have to decide is, based on how much contribution you are making, how much percentage of contribution you are making to the society. Like, let's say, for example, if you are working and if you are earning, you know, not so much, and you are donating also not so much. Okay, but as a full-time devotee, if you are able to contribute more to the society, then probably that is a good option for you to consider. Okay, but if after joining full-time, if you are just going to eat, sleep, and, you know, have nice kirtan katha, and you are not going to do preaching and all, then probably that is not a good option for you. You know, then you just want to have some, you know, nice atmosphere where you can just have peace. Okay, so you have to check everything in terms of contribution, that, you know, if you to join full time, then what will be the activity that you will be doing, whether you will be able to get accustomed to the temple environment, you know, because you have to get up early in the morning, you have to follow the temple authorities, right? So all these things are there. Or whether you would like to stay in your house and serve full time, you know, not stay in a temple. And if you have your own house, then you stay in your house and you full time you dedicate yourself, you know. So you have to engage somewhere, you know, for the preaching mission of ISKCON. So that's how we have to understand. Okay, so if you think through your work you are able to donate a lot of money to the temple and that is very important for the temple, then you continue doing that. But if you feel that, you know, you can contribute through some other service more effectively, then you take up that thing. Right? So see, for a grihastha, the foremost responsibility is to maintain the family life, to take care of the family, and retire at the appropriate time, you know, when everything is settled. Like, you know, when you have no obligation, no responsibility. So then you can decide whether you would like to continue your work and engage that in Krishna service, or whether if you join full-time, that will be more effective. So that you have to decide intelligently and through the guidance of devotees.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, okay, thank you so much for participating. Dandavat pranam to everyone. We'll have next week. Now. Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna to all devotees.
Hare Krishna.